My all-time favorite Disney movie is the 1991 animated movie Beauty and the Beast. I know that may sound kind of surprising, but this was the first animated movie nominated for Best Picture, and it was just a revolution, and for good reason. I mean, this is a beautiful story with phenomenal animation. You know, and my favorite song is the classic Be Our Guest. All of the castle's enchanted servants sing to Belle about how their only goal is to make her feel welcome and comfortable. They have complete and total focus on one thing, serving their guests. I think that's something that's rare to find in American business nowadays, to the point that it becomes remarkable and noteworthy when we see it. It's not even that common in healthcare, but what if it were? What if you had an organization that was full of people who were laser focused on providing excellent customer service, so focused that it became part of the organizational DNA? Well, today's guest knows that it's definitely possible, and he's going to talk all about how to bring some of that Disney magic to healthcare leadership. Let's kick it. It's not so good right now.
Welcome to the Scope of Practice podcast, where we help busy healthcare professionals learn to manage their businesses successfully and master their personal finances. Now, here's your host, Dr. Brent Lacey.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for the Scope of Practice podcast, where you can get the knowledge and resources you need to grow your leadership skills, your business, and your personal finances. Welcome to episode 77. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please be sure to go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now so you don't miss out on any of the exciting episodes that are coming up. Also, don't forget to turn on the automatic downloads on your podcast player, because nothing is more frustrating than getting ready to listen to your podcast and then all of a sudden you realize you don't have it downloaded. So make sure to hit that button that'll get you the automatic downloads. Hey guys, I have got a big announcement to make, and I want y'all listening on the podcast to be the first to know. I'm going to be hosting a digital summit on November 15th through 17th this year called Marriage and Money MD. You know, medical careers drain time and energy from physicians and their spouses, not to mention the crushing debt that most doctors are faced with when they first come out of training. Well, the Marriage and Money MD Summit is a free 3-day online event that will give physician families the tools, resources, and encouragement they need to strengthen their marriage and build wealth so they can have the happy family and financial independence that they deserve. Just go to www.marriageandmoneymd.com to sign up. It's totally free, so sign up today. And even if you can't attend live, sign up anyway, and you'll get automatic access to the replays of the talks for the rest of the week. If you want to get access also to the 10-plus hours of bonus content from our speakers, plus MP3 files of the talks to listen to on your phone, plus exclusive access to join the live Q&A sessions at the end of each night with our speakers, you can also upgrade to an all-access VIP pass for just $99. Ticket prices go up to $149 once the conference starts, so upgrade today and take advantage of those savings. Again, the summit itself is free to attend, so sign up today, www.marriageandmoneymd.com, or just click the links in the podcast description. Well, for today's sponsor, it's Storytime, brought to you by locumstory.com. Today, we'll be reading Docs and Shocks. Some docs are overworked, as work works overworked workers weary. Some docs are overstocked, stopped as pandemic TikToks keep docs off clocks. If docs are in shock as the pandemic clock TikToks, then locums is the token to unburn the burnt out broken. So how many clock TikToks must talk until docs tick box and swaps to the spoken locum tenens token to unburn the burnt out broken? Well, enough ticks have talked. The time is now and the locums is how. Locum tenens tends to trend as a godsend men to burnt out ends. For more locum tenens information, drpodcastnetwork.com/locumstory is your final destination. My guest on the podcast today is Jake Poor. I have been super excited to share this episode with you. You are really going to love this one. So Jake spent 18 years at the Walt Disney Company in Orlando, learning and teaching the art and science of Disney to his fellow 65,000 cast members. He opened up many businesses and new opportunities for Disney, including hotels, theme parks, nighttime entertainment, their version of timeshare, and he helped launch their famous Disney Institute, teaching other business leaders who they are and to share their business and culture secrets with the world. Jake used those same blueprints to create his own company to help transform healthcare for the past 19 years. Today, It's time to bring some Disney magic to healthcare leadership. So here is my conversation with Jake Poore. Hey, y'all. I am super excited to introduce my guest this week. This is Jake Poore. He is the president and chief experience officer of Integrated Loyalty Systems. Jake, thanks so much for joining us today on the Scope of Practice podcast. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Brent. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So first of all, I have to ask, you have my new favorite title of anybody that I know, the chief experience officer. That is a phenomenal title. And I'm sure that was chosen very deliberately. So president and chief experience officer. So knowing what I know about you and your content and all of your work over the years and your book, which we'll get into in a little bit, I have to believe that was a very deliberate choice, the chief experience officer. So what do you do in that role? What do you see that role as doing?
Well, you know, you've got in many healthcare organizations, the C-suite, right? You've got the chief executive officer, chief nursing officer, chief medical officer, chief operations officer, but who's really looking at it from the patient's point of view? We even have the chief human resource officer who tries to get us the right people and keep them or weed out the bad ones, but who's really looking at it from the patient experience? So I'm trying to create a mission of elevating the human side of healthcare by flipping the lens from the physician's point of view, the nurse's point of view, the front desk point of view to the patient's point of view. So about 15 years ago, I was working with Cleveland Clinic and they really wanted to focus on putting the patient in the bullseye. And they created a new position called the chief experience officer. And they brought in a physician named Bridget Duffy. And she really reinvented created the role. So Cleveland Clinic and Bridget Duffy kind of led the way. And I said, you know, just being a president or chief executive officer of a training consulting firm is not enough. I've got to model that. And so everything we do and everything we say, we try to emulate what we're trying to get our clients and our, you know, care team members to replicate.
So the way that you put that is that you're trying to flip it from the doctor point of view, the front desk point of view, to the patient point of view. So let me ask you, in your experience working with hospitals and big healthcare organizations all around the country, is that not normal? It seems to me like that should be the standard, that we're looking at it from the patient's point of view, that we're trying to serve the patients. That's who we're here for after all. But is that not what you found in general?
No, Brent, you know, I spent almost 2 decades at the Walt Disney World Company, the happiest place on earth. And my last 6 years there, I taught the Disney blueprints of how you recruit, train, onboard, reward, and hold people accountable. That show business kind of metric at Disney, I've taught it to business leaders all over the world. And 80% of the customers that came to Disney Institute were from healthcare. When I started to actually walk the halls of medical institutions, from physician clinics to shadowing, visiting nurses in people's homes to, you know, the operating rooms and the morgues and the patient floors, I saw a huge gap that healthcare is about 30 years behind hospitality. Yet, isn't it ironic that the word hospitality has hospital built in, right? Yet we don't do that. So the things that we made that we thought were common sense at Disney are not common practice in healthcare. And putting the customer or the patient in the bullseye is philosophically what everybody says. But when you're talking about, you know, chief operations officer, we're working about EVS and getting supplies and getting throughput and getting enough. HR is working about hiring and firing and benefits and benefits, right? Chief medical officer is working about keeping physicians happy. CEOs is trying to keep the place financially afloat with the CFO. We all got into this business because we want to take care of other human beings that are at their worst part in their life. Yet, sometimes we lose that loving feeling only because our job tasks put proverbial blinders on us to be so focused on transactions, we forget about making connections. And so I think there's a huge opportunity. And I admittedly tell my wife all the time, I'm never going to be unemployed, ever. Ever. We have 4,600 hospitals in this country, hundreds of thousands of physician offices and dental offices. And, you know, the majority of them, 80%+ are still operating in a 30-year-old game plan.
Do you think that that's just a holdover from people coming in and just sort of continuing things the way that things have always been done? Or is it something else?
That's a deep question, my friend. I think that's another podcast. You know, I think healthcare system in America was built on the Civil War battlegrounds in triage tents. I mean, we're still using words like triage and discharge. There's an example, 200-year-old words that patients don't even know. We're ready to triage you now, we say to your wife, right? She looks at you, you're the medicine man, right? What the hell's triage, honey? Oh, that just means they're going to assess you and prioritize you. Really? We're still using a French word that we use in the Crimean War with Florence Nightingale? And then you say to your grandmother, who's been inpatient overnight, the doctor comes in, looks at her, congratulations, Mrs. Lacey, we're going to want you to discharge tomorrow. Well, an elderly woman goes, discharge? That's feminine and private. We don't talk about that, right? I mean, come on. People are willing. Healthcare people are, they're in it for a calling, not a career, right? We get into this because we want to make people better. I joined healthcare because there's a huge opportunity to give them the tools and the game plan and the blueprints to do that. And they're willing, they're just not able yet. But yes, the way we've always done it is this undercurrent, and we're so busy. And now with the pandemic, we're so short-staffed and we can't throw enough money at it. And money is not the motivator, says Gallup, right? So how are we going to change in the middle of the worst national crisis in 100 years? So there lies the challenge, my friend. And I think a lot of the things that I bring to the table are simple, common sense, and if you do them consistently, they become habits and operational excellence.
Well, and there's a maxim that consistency beats intensity. And so if you constantly are doing little things, if every day you wake up and say, what can I do that makes something in my organization 5% better, at the end of the year, it is a tremendous improvement, but it's little changes every day. And that's the same kind of stuff that you see at Disney. I've read a number of books from various leaders and past leaders of the Disney Corporation. So I know that that's well ingrained there. So how did you come to make the switch from Disney over to healthcare? I mean, that's a big transition, right? But I could only imagine that bringing the Disney magic into healthcare is something that the United States healthcare system could desperately use.
Well, I think three or four things really were the impetus for me to change my career from Disney or entertainment industry to healthcare. Number one was a huge need. My mom was a nurse of a state-run university academic medical center in upstate New York. She had a nursing union, which she was out of because she was a nurse leader. And she would admit to me as a high schooler, you know, I can't promote the good people. I can't get rid of the bad people. And she'd blame it on the union. Yet when I started working at Disney, we had 24 unions, 17 bargaining agreements. We got along with unions, you know, not perfectly well. Unions do their job. They protect their members. But we got along flawlessly. And I think it was because Disney had an explicit, intentional culture. So it was black or white. And I think healthcare doesn't. I think culture, the word culture, is nebulous and gray. And people hide in the gray. And there's power in unions when there's a nebulous culture, because then it's your opinion against my opinion. Number two, my father, a long-term chain-smoking director, producer for CBS News, got lung cancer and on a fishing trip had a heart attack in a fishing stream with his brother, was rushed to a heart hospital in Michigan, where I rushed to his bedside, and they gave him too much blood thinner before surgery. The anesthesiologist didn't know that, gave him some more blood thinner, and he bled out. He died of a medical mistake. And then the last piece was on 9/11. I was at Eisenhower Medical Center on behalf of the Disney organization doing a cultural assessment. When the second plane hit the Twin Towers, I knew they were going to shut down Disney for a while. And I said, you know what? It's time to make a change. Mom needs it. Dad needed it for safety culture. And of course, healthcare doesn't have enough chief experience officers. So I need to go out there and create a patient experience boot camp for physicians and nurses and try to create a culture of hospitality in an industry that I'm going to need. I mean, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, Brent. So that's why I made the transition. I have never looked back. 18 years at Disney, now 19 years in healthcare. And I know I could leave this earth pretty much smiling because I know I've made an impact.
Well, that concept of creating intentional culture is important. So, you know, I was in the military for 15 years, and the military is a huge organization. Functionally, it acts in certain ways like a union in a lot of cases. And when I was at the various hospitals I was at, we had unions of the civilian nurses and the civilian staff. And that was one of the key things that always was lamented loudly and often by our leadership, is that it was you know, it's very hard to get rid of the bad people and very, very hard to hire good people. And, you know, as you're saying it that way, that it's not a union problem, it's a culture problem. I think that's 100% right. I really do. If you have a leadership that is committed to improving organizational culture, then you will necessarily attract the right kinds of people, and the wrong kinds of people aren't going to thrive. They're not going to do well. They're not going to want to stay. So as we're thinking about this though, I can just hear all the people listening right now going, yeah, Brent, Jake, that sounds great. But I mean, I'm already up so early in the morning. I see 35 patients a day. I've got all these notes to write. I don't have time to be holding hands and planning parties and, you know, creating awards for people that do stuff. I mean, how am I supposed to have time for that? But what you're saying is that it's not important. It's one of the most important things that we transform that culture so that we can create this new way of looking at things, this better way of doing things, which will then translate into business growth and improve patient experience and improved finances. So how do we start to do that as busy physicians?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you know, the physician is the rock singer, right? If you go to a rock concert, you're not looking for a seating host or a valet parker. You want to see the singer. Everybody goes to a physician office. They want to see the physician or the nurse practitioner or the midwife or the like, right? That's the reason we go. Now, you don't go to a car race and think about the pit crew or the manager of the pit crew. So we have not built the infrastructure, the ecosystem to support the physician so they could A, take care of patients, but B, give them the tools and the human resources to help manage the business. Now, we have this thing called a practice manager, but sometimes they're literally doing that. They're managing, they're not leading. The physician leader is the person we've come to see, but they need the pit crew to help support them, the infrastructure that helps them with the hiring, the onboarding, the recruiting, the on-the-job training, the on-the-spot recognition. You know, the physician's literally as another physician has told me, I feel like a gerbil on a wheel just running from exam room to exam room. You want me to say good morning to people, my staff? You want me to say great job to the MA? I don't have time for that. I get that. And then they're doing notes or double entry, as a lot of us are now dealing with this EHR system that is not conducive to running any kind of business. You have to do it not only for your own practice because you have an old grandfathered in EHR system, but then now you have to do it again for the health system that you're part of because not one of us can survive on our own. So I get it. There has to be a transformational moment where you go, you know what? I can't put all this on my shoulders. I've got to help inspire, not necessarily imitate, but innovate in a way where my employees, my practice managers, my other physicians, maybe there's a physician leader, we create something intentional. And what I've learned, Brent, over 30 years of building cultures and changing cultures is top down doesn't really work anymore. It's definitely not going to work after COVID or at this time in 2021. Just because you say to do it, I'm not going to do it. And if I don't like it, I'm going to leave. And you know what? I'll get a job tomorrow somewhere else. So the front desk, the MA, the nurse practitioner, the PA, your colleagues, they really can work anywhere they want in this country. So the question is, why do they want to stay? And money ain't it. So you've got to have a level of participation that drives authorship. And that authorship will drive ownership. And then they're going to police it when you're not around. And quite frankly, doctor, you're not around. So how can you give them common sense tools, a common language, and a common set of priorities where they can really be not only empowered, but also part of an ecosystem that's all operating and singing from the same hymnal? You're in the U.S. Armed Forces, military treatment facilities, right? The nice thing about that is they've really hardwired that down. They had a dress code. They had a look. Grooming standards. I'm looking at you right now. Your audience can't see you, but you're well-groomed. Your hair's cut over your ears. I had to shave my mustache to work at Disney. Now they allow them, right? Change with the times. But the U.S. military system had a field guide and they were well-trained. And we train not only for battle, but we train for operational excellence. We have to bring that same rigor of the U.S. Navy or U.S. Army to healthcare, but not just in a rigorous way, but what's the human side of it? And that's what I'm trying to do is bring the same amount of rigor you put in safety protocols as we do in compassion and empathy protocols.
So let's come back to the micro in a second. So let's say that we're a physician and we've got a team of, say, a few nurses and a few MAs and some ancillary staff. All right, but let's say that we're part of a larger healthcare organization or a big hospital system. So what do we do if we're not the person in charge of everything? If we're not the person in charge of supplies, we're not the person in charge of human resources. Maybe we get some input into hiring and firing, or in a lot of cases, maybe not. So if we're not the ones that have decision-making authority, how do we start to effect that kind of change at an organization level so that it trickles down to affect us at a micro level?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? Do we wait until the entire health system, like I worked with a 20 or 30 GI docs offices in the DC area called Capital Digestive Care, right? And these are independent mom and pop GI practices that finally decided, let's join our forces together, create one ecosystem, one EHR, one hiring and firing, right? And yet they didn't want to change their independent practice. So, all right, you know, there are three ways to do this: lead, follow, or get out of the way, right? So let's lead the way. Let's innovate. Let's tell our peers how to do it. So you've got to keep it simple. You know, when I worked at Disney, we had 100,000 employees on the Disney property, right? 100,000 employees. 65,000 of them we gave paychecks to, and 35,000 of them were contracted employees you thought worked for us, right? The balloon sellers on Main Street was outsourced. The photographers taking your picture over at Epcot, outsourced, right? But you didn't care, right? The average family spends 2 to 3 years to save up money to go to Disney. It ain't a cheap place. So how do you create something within one department that can lead the way? So let me give you a simple tool that your listeners can apply tomorrow to lead by example, right? Human, clinical, human, if you're a clinician, right? It's exactly what it sounds like. Keep it simple, right? Before you enter that exam room, start on the human. If your mother was in that exam room, Brent, how would you enter the room on the human side before you started a physical exam?
Well, we're going to talk. We're going to have a conversation. It's like, hey, how's it going? What's, you know, what have you been doing this weekend? You got any travel plans coming up? Stuff like that.
Perfect. Now you're sweating it because you don't want to get into too much chitty chatty because you're already going to be here at 10 o'clock at night and you're going to miss your son's, you know, baseball pitching tonight. But yes, simple, short-ended connectors, right? You're going to knock. You're going to wait till she says, come in. It's not an exam room, right? It's her exam room now that she's sitting on that table. She says, come in. You come in. You make eye contact. Human. You smile. Human. You say, good morning. Three humans in a row, right? Do you know how many physicians miss those three connections? They walk right to the EHR in the corner. So what seems to be the problem? Okay, let's reverse engineer that in a video, right? Here's the game film of what seems to be the problem. She called your office or your call center 3 weeks ago and told them what the problem was, and they heard him typing, right? Last night, she got a reminder phone call from that same call center or your front desk person to remind her to show up 30 minutes early. And they said, oh, by the way, why do you want to see Dr. Lacey? And she said it again. She goes, she's thinking to herself, gosh, don't they write this stuff down? Then she checks into the front desk that morning, 30 minutes early. And they say, oh, so what brings you in today? What? Don't these people talk to each other? Then the MA comes out and says, poor, or worse, Smith, and three people stand up, right? Why do we still do this, Brent? Because we've always done it this way. Who the heck is this person called an MA anyway, right? Why don't we call them a medical assistant? Because we do shorthand in healthcare. I'm a DO, I'm an MD, I'm a PA, I'm an NP, right? We're still using acronyms that patients don't understand. So this magical person who has her hand surgically attached to the exam room door yells out people's names in the lobby. By the way, that's a HIPAA infringement if that person is here in behavioral health, right? But we've always done it that way. So then they bring you back and Dr. Lacey walks in and says, so what seems to be the problem? And watch the blood in their neck start to go up in the middle of their face because that's called anger. And cortisol is being released in the bloodstream. And you're going to get a false positive on your blood pressure cuff because they don't like you, Brent. And when they don't like you, they're not only going to give you bad patient satisfaction, 8 out of 10 are just going to leave. They're just going to go to some other GI doc, right? So common sense is make that connection first. So, Mr. Poor, I understand your daughter just got a scholarship to Bishop Moore High School. What's that all about? Oh, my gosh. How did you know that? Well, my MA said, you know, while she was weighing you, said, is it right? Because we had our intake sheet that not only the MA wrote down the weight and blood pressure and so on, then the nurse wrote down the blood work and so on. But they wrote on the back something personal and put it on a magnet upside down on the door. So when you went to knock, You read the personal, you read the clinical, then you came in and you made the human connection. You entered on the human, you then transitioned to the clinical, and then you leave the room on the human, right? Very simple tool, human, business, human. How do they answer the phone? What's the name of your practice, Brent?
So Texas Digestive Disease Consultants.
Good morning. Thank you for choosing Texas Digestive Consultants. This is Brent. How may I help you? You just did human, business, human in less than 2 seconds. But we don't do that. We go, GI consultants. Like, we skip the human. And I'd like to speak with the Gloria in your office. Dead air. My pleasure to connect you. Call any Ritz-Carlton. It's a beautiful day at the Ritz-Carlton, Amelia Island. This is Jody. How may I help you? Why do they do that? Because that's the first impression. When you go to the front desk, they stop, drop, and greet, right? Connect on the human. Eye contact, smile. They turn their entire body. And Brent, the other thing you have to work on as a physician is sometimes you've been set up to fail. The exam table's over in that corner and the EHR computer is mounted on the other computer. You literally are turning your back on patients. You just have to ask permission. So the other tool I will give you is called caring out loud. Caring out loud is narrating what you're going to do before you do it, narrating what you're doing while you're doing it under the auspices of TMI, right? And the last one is telling what the next step or person is in the process. Mr. Poor, I'm sorry. Healthcare's gotten very complicated and very documented. Do you mind if I turn my back on you while I type your notes and ask you a few questions about your medical history? Who's going to say no? But you asked permission before you did it. So now that's human. Now do your business, right? So if you're not a clinician at the front desk, human, business, human, you look up. If you're on the phone and they don't know it, you've got earbuds in like I do now. You put your one finger up. I'll be right with you, right? You connect it on the human. Have a seat. I'll be right with you. Come out. Right? The MA doesn't just bark names from the front door. She walks that extra 30 steps, walks right up to you. Mr. Lacey, I'm sorry, Dr. Lacey. Oh, call me Brent. Brent it is. Hi, I'm Jake. I'm the medical assistant. I'm going to take you back to see Dr. Poor. Right? That extra 30 steps times 35 patients times 5 days a week, you've just walked the mile. So we call that play the extra mile. So now that you understand human, business, human, your staff will go, well, I like to do it this way. Well, I like to do it. Your physicians will go, well, I find it's helpful if you say this to an OxyContin or drug seeker. If you say it this way, you'll get less complaints and less pushback. So now in our staff meetings, we're sharing a very common sense tool. How do we connect on the human? How do we do our clinicals? How do we exit on the human? Front desk, MA, call center, PA, right? Billing, all the different touch points. And now we're creating a departmental playbook. That's your standard operating procedure that you had in the Army or Navy that we don't have. All we have in healthcare is the disease and discomfort and diagnosing playbook. Where's the human side? And I think that's a simple two tools that you can use to start building it in your department. Share that with the rest of the organization, and they're going to go, all right, now be careful what you ask for, because now they're going to want you to teach it. Dr. Lacey's got a playbook he wants to share with the rest of the system. Dr. Lacey, oh, oops.
Well, I'll tell you though, there's something to be said for being very good and producing excellence where you are. I call this bloom where you're planted. One of the challenges that we found in the military is that you're coming into a team or an organization that has got tremendous organizational inertia. And so the people that are there have been there for either a couple of years or if they're civilians, maybe for 20 years, but the way things have always been done is deeply ingrained, and it takes a lot. It's like trying to steer the Titanic, right? It's a lot of work to get that thing to move. But what I found in my experience is that if you do well with a little, you'll be given more to manage. And I think that that's a really important concept for people to understand. And this all sounds very simple, right? So the human, clinical, human. I love that. So yesterday I had a patient that came to see me, and we were chatting for a couple minutes at the beginning of the visit, and I hadn't seen him in a while. So I was asking him about what their kids were doing and that sort of thing. And we talked about her liver stuff. And then, I said, so, well, let's get you scheduled for your next follow-up visit. And they said, well, we're going on a vacation to Crete in about 2 weeks. Can we do it afterwards? Okay. So in my mind, I go, okay, that's something I want to remember. And I actually write those kinds of things down in my notes. So remember, patient is going on a vacation to Crete. And so then the next time I see her in 2 months, the first thing I do is say, hey, how is Crete? Show me pictures. Was it just a great time? Where did you guys stay? Is it someplace I should take my wife? I mean, it's a little thing, but it's that extra 2 minutes. And one of the things that I think really is important for people to remember is that as a physician, patients assume your competence. I don't think I've ever had a patient ask me to see my diploma. I've definitely never had that. And I've rarely had people ask me where I went to school. Sometimes it's because they've already looked it up, because people look up physicians online all the time. But most of the time it's because they frankly don't care, unless it's just a point of interest. Like, oh, I used to live in San Antonio. I saw you went to medical school in San Antonio. That's cool. Or something, some kind of personal connection. But they don't care. They just assume that you're good. But what they will remember is how they made you feel. They assume that you're going to treat them. They assume that you're going to help them get better. They assume they're going to feel better 3 weeks from now. But what they really remember is how you made them feel. And that human, clinical human, that caring out loud, taking the next steps, that's critically important. I love those very practical, very simple tools. And that is something that you can do anywhere. And so as physicians, if we start to do that, and our patient satisfaction scores go up, our no-show rate starts to go down because people actually like coming back to us, our referral base starts to increase because people say, oh, you got to go to Dr. Poor, you got to go to Dr. Lacey. They are just fabulous people. They really care about you. It was a great experience. Then you'll start to grow, and then your higher ups will start to take notice, because that has definitely happened to me. I came in, my first duty station was in Florida. And when I came in, I made a series of changes and we increased our throughput by 45% in the first 9 months. And my department chair came down one day and it was like, okay, what in the world are you doing down here? Because you have completely revolutionized things. What's different? And I walked him through all the stuff that we're doing, and they're like, okay, why aren't we doing that everywhere? I was like, I don't know, ma'am, that's your call, not mine. But it's sometimes it's taking these very small steps at your level, doing what you can do, and then allowing people to notice and start to build that change throughout the organization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my greatest advice I can give you in 2021 for your listeners are stop telling, start asking. Give them a simple common sense tool that they use at Chick-fil-A, that they use at the Apple Store, that they use at Southwest Airlines. Southwest Airlines, a unionized environment of 100,000 employees, yet their stock valuation is more than all other airlines combined, yet they're the cheap airline. Okay, you have to ask yourself, how is it that they do that? They do it simple thing, right? One tool executed well. Our greatest problems as Americans, I'm not even saying as physicians, as Americans, is we want to imitate, not innovate, right? What's Disney doing? What's Cleveland Clinic doing? What's that physician office doing up the street, right? And we try to steal their playbook. I will give you the New England Patriots playbook, okay? Good luck on that, right? It's not yours. Culture has to grow organically. If you're in San Antonio, look out the window. See that green stuff on the ground? It's called grass. It needs your soil, sometimes clay, sand, right? It needs rain. It needs sunlight, but it needs to be cut now and again. And you know who I'm talking about. Culture is a lot like the grass outside. You can buy someone else's culture and lay it down, and that's called AstroTurf, but it ain't going to grow. So you've got to give your team time to be authors of their own culture. Now, we go on my website, follow, buy my book, follow my podcast, whatever you want to do. Steal great ideas from others, but put them in your hip pocket and see if you can get your employees to start to note. So Dr. Schatzels, the president of Dignity Medical Foundation, a physician group called Mercy Medical Group in Sacramento. Dr. Schatzel comes up to me and says, Jake, I need to get my scores up. Give me some tools. What is other people doing? I go, Dr. Schatzel, you just were in my last workshop, human, clinical, human. Human first, your business second, human third. Well, can't you job shadow Dr. Cook, because his scores are higher than mine, and you can tell me what he's doing and I'm not doing. I said, I could, but why did you ask him? Your colleagues. He goes, well, we're very competitive as neurologists. You know, I don't know if I can do that. He comes back to me the next day. He goes, Jake, guess what? I said, what? Dr. Cook told me what he's doing that I'm not doing. I go, what's that? He goes, he's exiting on the human. I said, what does that mean? He goes, exactly. He says he's using your tool. He walks his patients to the front desk. I said, why does he do that? He says, because he was doing it for efficiency reasons, so the MA can turn and burn and clean that room. But he found out that not only was he doing the human business human and ending on the human, but patients love it. And the people in the waiting area go, oh my God, Dr. Cook just gave a handshake or a hug to his patient. I don't mind waiting now. To your point, patients don't know how good you are, right? They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And Maya Angelou said it best, right? I'm probably not going to remember what you said, this poet laureate. About me, people don't remember what you said. They're not going to remember what you did, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. So this touchy-feely thing is really embedded into business. And think about your practice now as a company, right? We as physicians, I'm not a physician, but as physicians, the data says we miss 90% of empathetic opportunities. Patient comes in, threw his back out. I've done it, right? Doctor says, so what seems to be the problem? Well, you know, my mom died. I had to fly to San Francisco. My brother and I had to help her, you know, get all her things together. I was lifting a box and I threw my back out. My mom died. I threw my back out. What does the doctor say? So does the pain radiate from your hip down to your leg? Right? We interrupt patients every 11 to 15 seconds. Brent, are you married?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know who your spouse is. So your spouse takes their car to the auto dealership. Mechanic comes out. There's some kind of knocking in their car. Your spouse says there's a knocking and the physician or the mechanic interrupts her every 10 to 15 seconds. Is he or she going to take a car back there? We don't change when we go to the doctor. We're still the same person who took our car to the mechanic. Yet the physician gets a pass for interrupting us every 15 seconds. So sometimes efficiency is the greatest enemy of courtesy. Because we're so worried about those other seven patients or the other three patients in the exam room. We're worried about these 35 patients that we're going to have to see today. We forget to be present. And so these common sense tools, and by the way, that leads to four times as much burnout, says Gallup, amongst physicians. They're not just leaving that practice. They're leaving the industry. Or worse, suicide. Is it all time? So there's a domino effect of metrics that are proving that if you slow down, we not only make a connection with the patient, we enjoy our jobs better. The people who work around us enjoy our jobs better. And by the way, the last thing I'll say on that, as a physician, the greatest tip I can give you to get your team morale up is start the day on the human. Don't come through the back door and just start seeing patients. Park in the back, come through the back door, walk to the front desk and say good morning to the front desk. Thank them for being there. Thank them for working shorthanded if we are today. See the MA, bring in muffins, whatever. You don't always have to throw food and money at it. They know sincerity and authenticity when they see it. Start that habit.
Well, and the time that you spend building those relationships, nurturing those relationships pays off huge. It increases morale. It increases productivity. So there's real value from just the business side of things, but it just makes it a more fun place to work. You're going to spend 40, 50, 60, 80 hours a week with these people for the rest of your life. You might as well enjoy it. So right. I think of it like a marriage. You have to be intentional. You have to nurture it. You have to spend time. It's people talk about quality time, but quality time is born from quantity time. So building some of that time into your schedule and say, okay, I'm going to have 10 minutes in the morning. I'm going to have 10 minutes in the afternoon where there are no patients scheduled. And I'm going to use that time to just walk around and go, okay, how's everybody doing? You know, just chat with somebody, make a personal connection. Oh, I think that's great. So how do we start to assess where our culture is? Let's say we're coming in to a new job and we're full of vim and vigor and we're all excited. We're like, I'm going to set the world on fire. I'm going to square every round hole, but you're coming in and you're in an existing organization and existing culture. How do we start to assess where that culture is and give ourselves a baseline from which to start to grow? Cause you can't go to where you're going to go unless you know where you're starting from. And then you have to build on that. So how do we assess where our culture is right now?
That's a really great question. Let me give you an example. Bill Bragg, who's a surgeon at Mercy Medical Group, we created this video, and I'd be glad to give you the link to the video for your listeners. It's called a pre-employment video. It's a five-minute video that clearly states who we are, what we stand for, and what we won't stand for in the surgery. After watching this five-minute video, if you think you fit our culture, please proceed with the application process. Bill Bragg has already interviewed at Stanford, UC Davis, UCLA, and Sutter, and Kaiser. So this is his sixth job application to work in Sacramento. He comes across this video and he says, I want to work here because those personal values, my personal values fit your organizational values. And I said, all right, we're going to revise this video and you're going to say that in this video. So that's a culture that says we're not perfect, but we're going to be intentional about what we stand for, what we won't stand. If you take that video for a moment, watch it, right? And then say, all right, my next job interview, what questions could I ask in the interview that says, what are you doing, organization or practice, to be clear about what you stand for and what you won't stand for? How do you do team rapport? And how do you reward and recognize each other? How do you deal with service recovery and upset patients, angry patients, vulgar language? What's our dress code? We don't do that in an interview. We interview to get the job, but we don't interview to work there. So to assess a culture, I mean, there's some things I do when I do a cultural assessment in a hospital. It takes me 5 days, takes five of my executives, but we do the employee experience, the physician experience, the patient experience, and the leadership experience. All four of those have got to come together in a Venn diagram as our ecosystem. But one fun thing that I like to do, Brent, I'll tell your listeners, I like to walk through a hospital and do a secret shop, and I'm in jeans and a t-shirt. I'll walk through the hospital. I'll walk through 100 employees and see if I can read their name tag. The average name tag, 60% of the name tags are flipped over or hidden by long hair or covered by a coat or on a belt or stuck in the cleavage. Name tag. Simple thing. First impression. That next thing I do is I take a GoPro camera. I put it right next to a trash can on the floor and I put a piece of trash, usually an empty styrofoam cup, next to that trash can 3 feet away. And I count how many employees walk over, around, or kick the trash before they pick up the trash. I call it a pride assessment. If you're proud to work here, you would wear your name proudly over your heart, right? You would pick up trash. And the last thing we do is we walk by 100 employees and do eye contact and smile. So I'm trying to make eye contact and smile with everybody going down the hall. And I count how many of them. And it's sadly about 30%. So those three things give you a quick indication of what it's like to work here. What's it like to be a patient or visitor here? And in a small practice, you could even do something else I do, which is I strap a GoPro camera on a wheelchair and I just wheel it around. And it's amazing what you see from the eyes of the patient. Now, from a cultural assessment in the job interview, I would also ask them, how do we reward success? Many organizations, physician-led organizations, have one metric, and it's called relative value units. The more patients you see, the sicker they are, the more money you make. Well, if that's our only metric for success, we're going to be out of business. We're going to be fast and efficient, and nobody's going to like us, and nobody's going to come back. And that's a bucket with a lot of holes in it. We're going to constantly put new patients in it, and they're going to constantly leave. So that'll give you some ideas on how you do that.
Those are really practical. I love the trash one, especially. That's a great one. And it's simple stuff like that, right? It's the little things that all translate into something larger. It's all tiny pieces. It's a microcosm of the greater organizational culture. So, okay. So those are some great ideas for how we start to assess.
I just want to give you one funny thing. So one of the things I do with that video of the trash pickup is I don't ever show anybody's face. I always show kneecaps down to shoes. So if you know what shoes people wear, and I play it in an auditorium for all the employees to see during a retreat, right? And I play the video and I said, now, just so you know, in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, nine, I'm going to do the video again. So the only people's face you see are the people who pick it up. So what's funny is when I put trash down the next time, people are actually looking around for the camera and they're holding the trash in the air and they're doing little backhanded dunks into the trash can. And that's fun because that says somebody might be watching, somebody in the parking lot, in the landscaping, picking up cigarette butts. But now that's not just Big Brother watching. It just becomes part of who we are. You go anywhere at Disney, and I'm not happy to say this, but I terminated three very smart, very educated leaders at Disney who just would not stoop to pick up trash. That was our culture because that was the number one key driver of people going to Disney World. The place is clean. And if that's the number one key driver of you taking your family to Disney World, by God, we got to get 100,000 employees to comply to that. So it's not just a nice to do. It's become part of our business makeup.
I think that is absolutely fantastic. So I'll tell you a story about the first time that I went to Walt Disney World. My wife and I went to a friend's wedding on Cocoa Beach. We stayed in Orlando for a couple of days extra after that and went to Universal and went to Disney World and a couple of the other Disney locations. And we were outside of the Jungle Cruise Aladdin area. It was at, I think, Adventureland. And we're just killing time while we're waiting for our fast pass to be available and for us to be able to walk in. And so we're just killing time in a shop, just kind of wandering around. And I saw that a couple of items had fallen on the ground, you know, a couple of the souvenirs, rubber snake or a teddy bear or something. I just picked them up and just set them on the table. I wasn't really thinking about it. I was just, you know, okay, hey, there's something on the ground. I just pick them up. one of the staff came over and said, thank you so much. I mean, like they came over and put their hand on my shoulder and said, hey, we really appreciate you taking the extra time to put those back and make this a nice place. And he pulls out this button that says Walt Disney Honorary Citizen. And I was like, what is this? He said, this is something that we're empowered to give people when they've made real contributions to our team. So this is a way for us to say thank you, and we really appreciate it. And I didn't think too much of it. I was like, okay, that's a little hokey, whatever. And then my wife and I put it on because we're like, hey, cool, check it out. We're honorary citizens, whatever that means. And so later we're standing in line for one of the rides. One of the employees that was at one of the rides saw it, and they looked at it and they're like, how did you get one of those? It was like I was wearing the Holy Grail or something. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is some prized thing that the organization has instilled. I can only imagine that people would just love to have a culture that is so loved and so celebrated by all of their employees that not only are they super excited to work there, they're super excited to celebrate other people who imbibe and embody those values. That is amazing. How do you train for that? I mean, do you have to hire for that, or can that be trained in an organization that already exists?
The answer to both of those is yes. Okay. When you move from a culture of ambiguity to a culture of intention, you're not going to get every physician to work there. They're going to opt out. Somebody's going to say, I have to be nice too. No, I've been doing this 30 years, honey. I'm here to save their butt, not kiss their butt, right? Good. We don't want you here. Probably the best quote I ever learned in Disney Business School, right? My MBA from Disney University, is unexpressed expectations can sometimes lead to unexpected resentments. Think about that for a moment. When you don't express your expectations, like you and I are going to be roommates. I've been in college 2 years before you. You're a freshman. You come in. We share a dorm or a room together. And I say, hey, who ate my yogurt? That would be me. Hey, we don't do that here. You didn't tell me that. Hey, whose underwear is over there by the washing machine? That would be mine. We don't do that here. So that's resentments. There was no new employee orientation in our dorm, right? And we do that. We throw physicians at it. Oh, you got a degree. You've got 2 years experience. Here's your keys. Here's your password. Go start seeing patients. Wait a minute. Who are we? What do we stand for here? How do we connect with each other? How do we connect with patients? How do we write each other up? That example that you used is a culture that incrementally grew over time and two pieces, I would say, right? One is a flywheel called on-the-spot recognition, encouraging employees to do human business human in a way that stays within the guardrails of our mission, vision, and values. When you do it well, I'm going to write you up in a good way. Right? That's on-the-spot recognition. Oh my gosh, Brent, you're walking out to patients? How do you do that? Well, I got Gloria at the front desk to write down what people wear. And he's got brown hair, he's white, and he's got this checkered shirt on. I knew that was Dr. Lacey. And I called him Brent because last time he was here, he told me that and I wrote it in the chart. My gosh, that's fantastic. Now we're going to use you as a model in our new newsletter. You're going to do an in-service for 15 minutes at our next staff meeting. And now that becomes a play in our playbook. Now that play can be an interview question in our next recruiting for a physician, for a front desk, and so on. So now the other piece is service recovery. Had a lady come in, her son had a bee sting. She had to take time off of work, bring him into our office of dermatology. What did you do? Well, we prescribed an EpiPen for him, gave him some epinephrine, the doctor did, prescribed him to go to Walgreens to get a pen and go back to school. Great. Doctor went home at 3:30. At 4 o'clock, the lady came back with her son, says she can't go in. The nurse says we have to sign this paperwork. Oh my gosh. She was really angry. It was a 45-minute drive. She was upset she can't go back to work. The kid had a test that day in science at 3:30, but the doctor's gone home. Well, what did you do? I jumped through hoops. I went down the hall, talked to the physician in family medicine, got him to sign the paperwork. But that's not service recovery. That's right. So I gave her a $25 gas card because she drove an extra 45 minutes. Ooh, that's a lot of money. Okay. So you gave her a Shell gas card. Now we have to Monday morning quarterback. So Monday morning, literally, we come in and say, how do we keep that from happening again? Some smart front desk person goes, listen, my old practice, I used to work in dermatology down in San Diego. We had a play for that. We actually called the local school districts in the three county areas. We asked them for their paperwork anytime we prescribe medicine. And we have them in a folder called EpiPens. So every time we prescribe an EpiPen, we said, what school district are you in? We pull it out, my God, now I'm writing you up for on-the-spot recognition. And that's that infrastructure. That's that ecosystem that now at Disney is helping us incrementally grow 1 inch at a time. Most organizations want to grow leaps 1,000 inches. Disney grows 1 inch at a time through on-the-spot recognition and service recovery. So as an employee, I get written up. I get encouraged to include you in the experience. So if it's your birthday, you just got married, you just got engaged, you're having a reunion, whatever those moments in time are. Do you know, Brent, I'm going to give you a great example. I'm at a hospital system in Allentown, PA, a big hospital system. I'm doing secret shopping on the security team at the front desk. I'm in jeans and a t-shirt. I run from my car from the parking lot to the front desk, and I say this to the security officer. Hey, my sister just had a baby. Can you tell me where the mother baby floor is? He goes, driver's license. I go, what? He goes, that's a secure floor. I'll need your driver's license. Okay, what would any human being saying to any other human being, Brent, if you said, hey, my sister just had a baby?
Congratulations. Is it a boy or a girl? What's her name? What's his name?
Okay, that's basic level he skipped because he skipped the human. He went right to business, right? Number two, if Disney ran your front desk, Brent, what else might they have behind the desk to celebrate that moment, by the way, which happens a lot in a baby hospital, right? What would we give the security officer who's contracted as a way to help celebrate this new uncle?
So I don't know. I don't even know. What would you give him?
I don't know. A candy cigar, a button that says proud uncle, it's a boy, it's a girl, some nominal, not expensive things to say, okay, but let's rewind, right? Here, let me push the rewind. Let's play it again. Hey, my sister just had a baby. Can you tell me where the mother baby floor is? Oh, congratulations. What did she have? Oh, she had a little girl. Oh, what's her name? Elena Grace. Grace, that's a beautiful name. Yeah, she's named after my grandma Grace, who passed away a couple years ago. Oh, what a beautiful name. Well, you want your sister and your new baby, Elena Grace, your new niece, to be safe, don't you? Absolutely. Well, only special people get a VIP pass for that floor. And to get that VIP pass, I'm going to need your driver's license. I'll just stop for a moment, right? We connected on the human. We still did the business. What hospital do you want to go back to, Brent? Right? Now I'm an uncle, but I'm also married. I might have a baby someday, or my wife will, right? Might we encourage her not to go to the other hospital we were going to go to, drive a little further, pay a little more? Common sense dictates in business, we're willing to drive further, wait longer, pay more for any business that treats us as a VIP. And not just a very important person like in most businesses, a very individual person, right? And what they did for you is they singled you out as an individual, and then they built mechanisms that said, when you see that button, make them cut the line, treat them special, call them out. Now, my daughter's an introvert, 9 years old. Her birthday, she wants to go to Disney. She gets the birthday pin, says, happy birthday, Elena. After the 50th, 100th person said happy birthday, she goes, Dad, I can't take this anymore. I don't want the attention, right? So Disney's not for everyone, right? It's not. Not everybody wants to wait in line. Not everybody wants to treat it special. Not everybody likes Disney Entertainment. Southwest Airlines is not for everybody. But what you can't argue with is the intentionality of their organizational playbook. Start to look at Chick-fil-A, Apple stores. You know the Apple store? I was there the other day, Brent. I took my iPhone in. It was acting kind of wonky. And I got there early. I'm always like you, probably military. I'm always before they open, I want to be there. And I saw them doing a team meeting in front of their front desk, about 30 employees. And it was a stand-up meeting. And they ended the stand-up meeting with clapping. I thought that was interesting. They ended clapping. And they started clapping. And they walked to the front door. And somebody opened the door. And as 30 of us walked in, they gave us a standing ovation. Little thing, big impact, right? Could we start our practice with a standing ovation, right? No, I go to your practice between 12 and 1, and they bring this blinds down behind a glass with a hole in it, and it says no food or drink, yet I can hear them chatting and talking about other patients and eating their lunch behind the glass. We have to understand about what we stand for. And the other thing is what we call organizational graffiti, those things that detract or distract away from the ideal patient experience. And we've got to make sure we do both.
That is awesome. Well, I would just love to have another 5 hours just sit here and nerd out about this stuff with you. But if people want to continue this conversation, if people want to learn more from you, if people want to hear more about what ILS does or wants to get more of your content or see more of your stuff, you've got great stuff on your website. I know you've got a lot of great content. So how can people connect to you and ILS, and how can people continue the conversation?
Well, listen, I have the abundance mentality and I want to give away my stuff. So every day on LinkedIn and Twitter, I'm sharing these tools. I'm a lifelong learner, so I don't profess to know it all, but I'm constantly collecting best practices and lessons learned. So if you want that, just follow me on social media. It doesn't cost you a penny. For, I don't know, 20, 25, 30 bucks, you can buy my book, 99 Lessons Learned from Disney to Improve the Patient Experience. So I give you a lesson from Disney and how I applied it to healthcare. So you get lots of examples. Unfortunately, most of those are hospital examples. So I know you can adapt and adopt that to your practice. Number three is I took that book last year and I built a lesson plan for it. So for every chapter of the 99 lessons, I built you a lesson plan. You can sit down with your team every week, every month, and talk about how we can adapt that to our practice. Number four, I took all 99 chapters last summer since we were all locked down, and I created 99 videos to go with that. So now you got 99 lessons online. And number five, if you really are exhausted and you want to really keep engaged, I invite you to come to the Grand Floridian next January 24th through the 26th. I'm actually going to do a small intensive retreat for any leader in healthcare that wants to sit in a conference room, learn about the Disney approach and how I've adapted in healthcare, go out into the parks or the resorts, see it in action, and then we'll go to a local hospital where we built it so you can literally kick the tires, feel it, see it, and then we'll come back to the classroom and say, so what? That's a multi-billion dollar entertainment empire. That's a huge hospital's part of a huge health system. What does that mean to my small physician practice? And you'll be able to leave with the blueprints you need to build a world-class service culture and patient experience. So there's a bunch of ways you can stay connected.
I love it. That's great. That's going to be awesome. Well, Jake, thank you so much for coming to us today. I'm going to encourage everyone, definitely go to his website, and I'll make sure to have the links to all that in the show notes. Follow him on LinkedIn, get the book, 99 Lessons Learned from Disney to Improve the Patient Experience. All great stuff. And if any of that stuff is even half as good as the conversation we just had, it is going to be life-changing for so many people. So I really encourage people to go check it out. Jake, thank you so much again for joining us today on the Scope of Practice podcast. I really appreciate you coming on.
Brent, thank you for what you do. I think these conversations are vital, and keep the conversation going. Thank you so much.
I love Jake's attitude about business, and especially about healthcare business. You know, one of the reasons that I like to bring non-physicians on the show for you is that I think that there's a lot that we can learn about business from people who are not physicians. If we want to learn to be excellent at something, we need to study the people who are already excellent. I hope that these conversations keep giving you that knowledge and those resources to help you become the healthcare leader that you want to be and that America needs you to be. Well, if growing your business or growing as a leader is an important goal for you, then I have an amazing free resource to give you. It's called 5 Critical Tools for Physician Leaders. This guide has 5 incredible resources included to help you find ways to celebrate your team members, build a mission statement that actually makes an impact, create a one-liner that will help you market your business more effectively, have a set of leadership books that will help you grow even more, and a 10-day challenge to improve your clinic's efficiency and customer experience. It's totally free to download. Just go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/physician-leader-tools or click the link in the podcast description to get it. Don't forget also, sign up for the Marriage and Money MD Summit, which will take place on November 15th, 16th, and 17th this year. It's completely free to attend, and so you should definitely sign up today. The website is www.marriageandmoneymd.com. Or just click the links in the podcast description. You can also upgrade to an all-access VIP pass for just $99 up until the day of the conference starting. So go ahead and sign up for the free event today, and you can always upgrade later. But go ahead and sign up today at www.marriageandmoneymd.com. Thanks so much for joining me on the Scope of Practice podcast today. You can also find all those resources in the show notes at www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode77. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode77, or just click the links in the podcast description. Thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast at www.thescopeofpractice.com.
For doctors, the story has changed. Visit drpodcastnetwork.com/locumstory for unbiased information about locum tenens and see if it should be your next chapter. And remember, locum tenens tends to trend as a godsend men to burnt out ends.